Good afternoon. Welcome to Bootleg Avocado, bringing you stories in the food startup world. This episode, we're going to talk to Klaus Muller, founder of Boardwalk Hospitality. But we got Anthony Nichols here, my co-host and business partner. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I have a mouthful of beets right now.
Yeah, we're kind of eating what you should, actually. I don't know if it's... But it is a food podcast. So
yeah, it is a food podcast. So we can eat.
Yeah, we can eat. Yeah,
you just don't want to hear us eat.
Exactly.
You guys should have told me because I literally just finished my lunch as fast as I could.
So everyone's eating now.
Yeah. So that's Klaus. So Klaus, tell us about yourself. Give us kind of a quick little blurb of the Boardwalk Hospitality. What you guys are all about. You know, what sort of businesses have been part of it.
Absolutely. So my family, I have like a foodie background. We owned a bunch of restaurants in Europe, and my business partner, Mike, when he came out of college, bought a Dairy Queen. So we both have a food background. I then came over to the States 28 or 30 years ago. We started a couple of public companies, Baby Genius brand and a big art company that are now, one of them is on the NASDAQ, the other one is on the bulletin board. And my background is, using in raising institutional monies. I'd be like at the Roth Capital Conference, raising a lot of money. So we had the opportunity here on the boardwalk, on the Venice boardwalk, to rent a 2,000 square foot space in pretty much the best location on the boardwalk. And we live down here, so we know the area. The Venice boardwalk is the number one visited beach and boardwalk in the world.
It's beautiful.
About 15 million annual visitors. So the great thing is, unlike a restaurant where you open up and bleed money and try to build a clientele and spend a lot of money on marketing and advertising, if you open something on the boardwalk, you have clients walking past your door day one. So you're basically cash flow positive the day you open. So We leased the space and went to Ben & Jerry's in Vermont, got them to give us the franchise for the area. We're initially going to self-fund it, and then I kept on getting all these emails about crowdfunding. So I contacted a guy called Dylan Enright at WeFunder and told him, look, I love this idea of crowdfunding where you have all these small investors that basically each of them becomes a brand ambassador for your company. And we decided to give it a shot. We were looking at raising $100,000. WeFunder told us that we should go in and say we want to raise a minimum of 100,000 and a maximum of 500,000, and did a campaign, really had no idea what we were doing and totally overfunded it, shot past the $500,000, had to send people money back.
Wow.
And now have 520 individual investors in this Ben & Jerry's who, all feel like it's their store, who send us their clients, who buy merchandise, and who are brand ambassadors for us. So Ben & Jerry's opened in April last year and it's doing extremely well. We, have a great run rate. We're profitable straight away, as I said, in year one. So we have additional space there right next to the Ben & Jerry's. So we're kind of thinking, what should we put in there? So during the year, we asked our customers food-wise, what are you interested in the boardwalk? What is missing? And what happened is there's a couple of really nice restaurants and then there's a couple of real like crappy food places and people, that come with their family, they are looking for a fun experience. That's why that works so well. But they're looking for great food that is affordable and where their kids have a fun time. So we looked at pizza, we looked at burgers, we looked at everything and in the end decided to put a hot dog place in there. It's going to be called Surf Dog. We are initially serving exclusively Nathan's or beef hot dogs, which is kind of the original boardwalk hot dog from the East Coast. I think they started it exactly 100 years ago there.
Mm-hmm.
And decided to call WeFunder again, do another small raise. We're looking to raise $100,000 through the WeFunder campaign. I think we're like at $62,000 right now. So in all likelihood, we'll close the race at the end of this month. But it's wonderful. It's real, real fun. We have, 60, 70 people already again for the hot dog place. And I love this way of raising funds. You know, it's exciting. It's fun. You have all these small investors that, you know, really feel ownership in the place, that have fun with it. A lot of them visit us. A lot of them come by to, you know, shake hands with the staff and take photos. And it's, yeah, I've been, you know, a real convert. I love crowdfunding now. So that's the story in short.
So, you know, jumping into kind of the food world, you know, what's kind of the things you would recommend another entrepreneur to be be noticeable of, to kind of really take the time to do properly?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you start something in the food business, first of all, if it's you know, inexpensive food like ice cream and hot dogs, I think it's great to get a franchise. Just the brand name is so valuable to start a business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the most important thing for us is foot traffic. We used to own a store in Las Vegas in the Forum Shops at Caesar's Palace, where we, I think, had a 650 square foot store, and we paid, I think, $700,000 rent a year. So,
oh my God.
And I think a lot of times people have a problem. They look at the actual rent as opposed to the rent in dollars per people that walk by your store each year. So I love the most high rent environment possible because I want foot traffic. So the store in Vegas did extremely well despite the huge rent, because we just had, you know, 50,000 people a day walk by there. And it's the same thing on the Venice Boardwalk. It's a high rent environment, but you have gigantic foot traffic. So you're pretty much assured, if you have a good product, that you're cash flow positive from the day you open, without having to spend any marketing, advertising dollars or anything. You know, we have 15 million people walk by our store each year. And
that's all year long, right?
And that's all year long. Obviously, right. It's used heavily towards the summer months, towards the holiday months. So in July, for example, we'll probably do three times the sales, at least with ice cream, which is, you know, also a summer food.
Right.
In July, we'll probably do three times the sales.
Wow.
That we'll do in the winter months. With hot dogs, I don't think it'll be quite as drastic. But yeah, it's all year round. I mean, the boardwalk is busy any time of the year.
Right.
And what you know, I'm not talking, this is obviously not a five-star restaurant where, you know, it's a totally different marketing. But something like ours, what we do, we put roadblocks in front of the store. So we don't want people to walk past, we want people to stop. So
sure.
Outside our store, we have artificial grass with rainbow-colored chairs and benches, and we have cows that are painted in cute graffiti, and a wiener dog that is painted in cute graffiti, and big umbrellas and signs, and we play great music. So the chances you're not going to walk by the store, the chance actually is that you're going to stop and take that important Instagram photo with one of our, you know, fun graffiti Venice Beach cows. And then, you know, once you stop and you smell the waffle cones and you see the ice creams, and the chances you're going to walk into the store. So I think for an operation like ours in a high traffic location, the most important thing is to do whatever you can to stop people from walking by your store. And once they stop, it's, you know, game over.
Well, I mean, I just find it interesting that, you know, you have kind of all that foot traffic there, and it's the simplest stuff that sells. You know, it doesn't have to be anything very complex or out of the ordinary. Ice cream and hot dogs have been around forever.
It's kind of like the perfect beach food, though. You know, you get your hot dog, get your ice cream.
Well, I mean, Kona
walk
Island,
down.
Like,
yeah, I mean, it's yeah, exactly.
Go on the boardwalk over here, and you know,
that's where Nathan started 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Now we're the first West Coast boardwalk that is going to serve their hot dogs, and I totally agree. You want to keep it as simple as possible, especially in the summer months. In the summer months, we literally have a line of, you know, 50 to 100 people queuing up to buy ice cream. So you don't want to make it too complicated, because you want to process orders as fast as possible. The great thing with ice cream compared to most other foods is you don't have any waste. You know, when we used to own restaurants that were like fancy restaurants, and we would buy lobster, and if you didn't sell it, it would go off and you'd have to throw it away. If you didn't buy enough of it, people would be upset if you don't have it. Ice cream, we have like a huge walk-in freezer that is like booming in the Antarctic. and the ice cream lasts 18 months. So
that's
basically
amazing.
Never run out of food, nor do you ever have to throw any food away. And it's pretty much the same deal with hot dogs. You know, Nathan delivers pre-cooked hot dogs. And so you have no food wastage, which in, you know, an upmarket restaurant, food cost and waste is gigantic.
So how did you establish the culture in these two stores? Like, is there a specific culture you've had, you know, kind of from the beginning? Did you start something new? Like, what is the culture of this?
Yeah, I mean, our idea is to, you know, people want to be entertained. And it's just like people want to go to Universal or people want to go to Disney or people want to watch a movie. People are longing for entertainment. So our stores are like super, super fun. And you come in there, the staff is all young and fun, and they talk with you. And it's really, you know, and the kids love it, and they can sit on our colorful cows. And so there's like something for everybody to – it's an experience. We really sell an experience way more than ice cream because, you know, Ben & Jerry's ice cream is pretty expensive stuff. I think our average sale is over $10 for ice cream. So – it's not an inexpensive product. It's a, you know, very high quality product. We also love with Ben & Jerry's that they're so involved on a social level. So you have to donate a percentage of your sales to local charities. And, you know, we're supporting the Venice Clinic, Family Clinic. We're supporting Boys and Girls Club. We are supporting SPY, which is a safe place for youth, for homeless youth. And we support Heal the Bay Foundation to clean up the beaches. So, you know, you're having a fun business that is enjoyable, with great staff, you're making money, and you're actually making a difference in your local community as well.
So what are the not fun parts then?
What are the not fun parts? Paying interest on the money you borrow.
Yeah, that's not fun.
The not fun parts is really, once you're open, it's all fun. The not fun parts is that to open a store here, it takes forever. You have to deal with the Coastal Commission on every tiny little change you do to a building, including putting a sign out on the building. So we went from the day we like rented the place till the day we opened was, you know, a long, long time. I mean, it took us nearly a year or so to open the place, which in theory would take 3 months, but it doesn't because of all the politics and building permits and everything. So, yeah, so you're eating, you know, a lot of capital. So, you know, our rent is around $20,000 a month. So if you sit there for 10 months waiting for permits and you're blowing through $200,000, and the initial money we put in was all our own. So that kind of gets frustrating. But, you know, that's the cost of doing business here. And you just have to be well capitalized. I think, you know, so many restaurants end up going under because they're just undercapitalized. And, you know, everything takes longer than you think. It costs more than you think. So, yeah, I think in the beginning that was really the main thing where we, like, you rented a place and in theory we could be open in 60 days and then it takes, you know, 9 months.
That sounds great. I mean, there's a lot of obstacles there that are hard to avoid, but it's kind of part of the whole system.
Pays off at the end.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, they're not avoidable, but I think that, you know, all of us, everybody, including myself, you know, we're all optimistic and we always think things are going to work out great. And the truth is they always take longer than you think and they always take more money. And, you know, we've seen it here locally too, where, you know, mom and pops have like, whatever, a couple hundred thousand dollar savings. The guy quits his job because they want to open a cute restaurant. And then, you know, often they're bankrupt before it even opens, or they open up and in the first, you know, 2 weeks, all their friends eat there every night. And then their friends stop eating after 2 weeks and they don't have a big marketing budget. And, you know, restaurants fail. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, banks do not finance restaurants that don't have 2 years operating history, because most of them unfortunately fail. And it's sad. You know, we have it here too in strip malls where, you know, mom and pops get restaurant spaces on the second floor of a strip mall. And you can literally bet your money that within a year they're gone.
That's always a bad idea.
Oh, yeah, they like go in there and say, well, the rent is only half of what it is on the ground floor. But only 5% of the people will ever go up to the second floor. So
exactly.
There's a lot of, you know, there really should be like a guide how to not go bankrupt within the first 12 months. And it's relatively simple, I think. Having said that, you know, we've owned 8 restaurants, we've owned wine bars, we've owned everything, and you know, they weren't all successful either. So we've learned really the hard way. But now, you know, I think we kind of know what we're doing. And it's fun. You know, it's actually fun. It's fun sitting in the store, looking at the people, seeing all the kids smile, parents putting their kids on our, you know, giant graffiti cows that look fantastic. Everyone is taking Instagram pictures, and it's really fun. It's a real feel-good business.
We gotta go visit, like we always say.
Sounds nice.
So, Klaus, we're gonna take a quick little break. When we come back, we're gonna cover our usual empathy question, which is kind of a little personal question I want to ask you, and then jump a little bit out of your background.
All right, perfect.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado, bringing you stories in the food startup world. Yeah. Klaus Muller, founder of Boardwalk Hospitality. So Klaus, let's jump into a little bit of your background. But before that, we have our usual empathy question. So Anthony's going to pick one of these cards out, and then I'll read you the question. And you can be as, you know, personal as possible, or honest, or honesty is always a good thing.
There we go.
All right. The question is, where do you go to? Hold on. Where do you go to experiment? Is that right?
Burning Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, every year for the past 10 years. So
really?
I've never been.
I hear it's amazing.
Can we join you?
Yeah, I really never wanted to go because I thought it was just a big fest of dirty hippies. And
it's a little dusty.
And my wife ended up forcing me to go 10 years ago, and I had literally the best week of my life. And wouldn't miss it for anything. We're back every year. We ended up buying our own Airstream to take there and just absolutely love it. Amazing art, like the most fantastic art anywhere in the world. You know, all the top guys, whether it's Elon Musk, all the top guys go, and it's a real, real fun event.
Wow. I mean, I
don't want anyone to go because it's so hard to get tickets now. So, you know. Yeah.
What do you have to do? It's just on the website, no?
Yeah, it's a lottery. It's a lottery online, and it's become really difficult. I think the tickets are maxed at like 70,000 tickets, and they sell within 5 seconds.
Wow.
Become harder and harder to get tickets. But we have a, you know, organized camp. It's like a huge Moroccan tent that doubles up as a free bar for anybody. So we get an allocation of tickets.
Nice.
That's a great idea.
I would say that's the perfect place to experiment pretty much anything you want, because you can do whatever you want there, and it's super fun. It's a great crowd of people.
Yeah. So if you got 2 extra tickets lying around, you got 2 guys here that never been. So.
Yeah. We'll serve. What? Maybe, do you take ice cream? No, you can't take ice cream. I think it'll melt, right?
Obviously. You're in the
yeah.
But you know what? Funnily enough, there was a camp next to us a few years ago where there came a gigantic freezer truck, and they served, I think, 40,000 portions of ice cream during the week.
I know. People do the coolest things there. That's the thing about that festival.
It's insane. I mean, it's worth Googling it and looking at the photos and checking it out. It's like, you know, and people who haven't gone, it's got a bad rap, just like me, you know, wanting to hate it all my life.
Yeah.
And it's the best.
All right, I know.
Burning Man.
I know what I'm doing after this podcast is trying to get in that lottery. Where that ain't been.
The Fire Music Festival will go next year.
I don't know about the Fire Music Festival.
By the way, I wish I had gone. It would have been so crazy fun to be part of that.
I think if you don't mind laughing at yourself, it probably would have been hysterical.
Yeah,
I think so too. I really am so upset I didn't go, because I think it would be so hysterical to be. It doesn't get any worse. It would have been so awesome.
You're thinking, unless you're really, really dying to expect all that luxury and then get there. But I think if you go with a good sense of humor, you would just laugh your ass off for like the entire time there.
We just back to back watched the 2 movies that were made on it and the 2 documentaries, and it's beyond brilliant.
Yeah, they are really good.
It's a sign of the times too, as far as the impact of social media, everything else. It's like you could put anything up there and people believe it.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely anything. I mean, it's beyond. It's hysterical.
No, pretty funny.
Yeah, some crazy stuff now. I mean, yeah. Anyway, so Klaus, not to like you know, get out of too many tangents. So what's kind of your background as far as, you know, how'd you get into the entrepreneurial world? Did you always, you know, have kind of that mindset? You know, what did you have to learn along the way, which was kind of the hardest?
Yeah, so, you know, I was born in Germany. My parents moved to Portugal when I was 12 years old, and they built golf course resorts there. And I went to international school in Portugal, and I went to boarding school in England. And my dad, you know, constantly started companies, built companies. So I kind of grew up with that, and he made sure that I had like a banking and accounting, auditing and marketing background. So I did like 6.5-year stints in different companies, internships, then lived in Brazil for a while, worked there as an auditor. And yeah, always wanted to, you know, build my own companies. I came over here to the States 30 years ago, started a real estate project that nearly bankrupted me. And then I started an orphanage in Thailand like 28 or 27 years ago. So I spent about a week in Thailand every month and decided to start a business in Thailand just so I could write off my flights. And we started a jewelry in Bangkok that ended up becoming the biggest importer of jade jewelry here to the United States. And we would like make jewelry for like, this is, sounds embarrassing, but it was great business, like the Susan Summers collection on her shopping network and stuff.
Nice.
The Thighmaster.
Had a jewelry for quite a long time and were a big supplier to the TV networks. That started getting more and more competitive as the real big guys started using the TV networks to just sell their closeouts and their overstock.
Yeah.
So we basically were looking, what is a business that has a really high margin where, you know, you have enough room for error and mistakes. And we started a company called Baby Genius. We did classical music for children, which got initially seed funded by Minnesota Public Radio. And it was just a great business. At that time, CDs and DVDs were selling retail for $16. They were costing like 40 cents to make. So there's a huge margin in it. Most of the children's songs and classical songs are in the public domain, so you didn't have to pay royalties to anybody. We created, you know, everything from Bedtime Beethoven to Magic Mozart and built Baby Genius into a pretty big brand, took the company public and eventually sold the company. It's now, it's still, you know, it's called Genius Brands International. It's on the NASDAQ. It's got some really big deals with Netflix and stuff. So, yeah. So, you know, after we sold that, we were like, okay, what else do we want to do? And we started in sports company called, we had these stores called Field of Dreams in Las Vegas, where we would fly in people like Pete Rose and Montana and all the big sports stars, and they would sit outside our store and sign autographs. And again, the most amazing business. You have a photo, basically a 50-cent piece of paper, and Joe Montana signs it to someone and it becomes a $100 piece of art.
Right.
That was a really great business. The main company, Dreams Inc., ended up being sold to a private equity group for $180 million. So we realized that, you know, printing paper is a good business. So we started an art company and called Globe Photos Inc., which is now also publicly quoted and hopefully on the NASDAQ this year. Globe, you know, grew to now it has an archive of 17 million original negatives from the 30s to the 80s. Everything pop culture and sports. So whether it's, you know, Marilyn Monroe or James Dean or Frank Sinatra or the Zeppelins or the Stones, we own millions and millions of the original negatives with the rights to them. And we print limited edition prints that sell all over the world. And, you know, again, obviously a phenomenal margin business.
That's literally the most, that's an original Instagram right there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, really, you are the ultimate businessman.
and we have some other companies. My wife, my son Hayden, and I are co-founders of the LA Comic Con, the comic convention.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
We're still the largest shareholders in that, and we had, you know, we had over 100,000 visitors last year, so that's really successful. And what else? We own a teak plantation in Costa Rica that we planted 22 years ago and have thousands of mature teak trees there, and are doing a teak tea company right now on that.
Nice.
We do all sorts of stuff. We import wines from Australia to Walmart, anything that is kind of fun and profitable.
Yeah, I mean, those are two good goals.
Two really, really good things. Yeah, exactly.
So. We want to do stuff that we have fun with, you know, so art, wine, ice cream, you know, basically, you know, stuff that we enjoy. We also do a lot of social stuff. So, you know, we have 3 orphanages that we support, and we do monthly art auctions to raise money for these orphanages that are in Thailand and Ethiopia and Morocco.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do we spend like 20% of our time and effort on doing social stuff and giving back. Having said that, we obviously also love making money and having a good life. So.
Yeah. So what's your day-to-day like? I mean, given that you got your hands on a lot of different things, like how do you kind of manage yourself, your time, and where are you best used?
We all work in the business. My wife, myself, both my kids work in the business. So, you know, we get up. Whatever, 6:30 in the morning, be in the office from 7:30 till, I don't know, 6:30 in the evening. So we pretty much have 11-hour days, pretty much every day, but we live 10 yards from the beach. So during the day, you know, I take time off and just put on some trunks and run on the beach every day to stay fit.
Mm.
And yeah, so we're kind of workaholics, but it's all fun. You know, you work with your whole family in really fun projects. And you're giving back to, you know, the community as well. So there's, you know, really no complaints.
Right, right. And then California obviously is home for you. Do you see yourself living anywhere else, or this is kind of your home base for a while?
When we first came here, we lived in Del Mar outside San Diego for 15 years and now in LA for 15 years. I mean, you know, initially I always thought, in a couple of years I'll move back to Europe, but I've been saying that for 29 years, so that's probably not going to happen.
Well,
we love it here. We live, you know, like I said, we live in Venice Beach, 20 yards from the ocean. I can go on my bicycle in 5 minutes to the Ben & Jerry's if anything happens there, and really no complaints, really pretty lucky.
No, that sounds like a pretty good setup. Mm.
Are you looking to do any other Ben & Jerry's, or are you looking to expand?
Only if there's a really great opportunity. You know, again, I think I don't want to be in a food business where you have to market and advertise and create a clientele over and over again. So
sure.
The boardwalk is perfect. You know, I'd love to have 10 places on the Venice boardwalk. I think, you know, I love Las Vegas because we had 3 stores in Las Vegas that all did really, really well, because Vegas is, I think, for retail, the most exciting city in the world. Not only do you have a lot of people, but it's like having, you know, every 3 days you have a new city coming in. So there's new people every 3 days.
Yeah.
Where in LA, you know, the boardwalk is great because it's mainly tourists. But if you're like on another street in LA, you know, you have a lot of foot traffic, but it's always the same people that live around the area that walk by. Whereas in Las Vegas, every 3 days, you know, people leave and new people come in. So you have a constant new clientele.
Yeah.
So I think if we would do another location, we would, you know, try to do something, whether it's in the Forum Shops at Caesars or right on the Strip. We actually looked at renting a place on the Las Vegas Strip before, but it's very, very hard to get something unless, you know, you're a mega corporation.
Mm. I mean, Vegas has everything you could find anywhere else. There's a conglomerate of things there. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, you look at the restaurants. I think the what's that Buffett's restaurant there? Margaritaville. I think it's the number one restaurant in America.
Oh my God!
It's the most noticeable. I mean, everyone knows it. You know, everyone knows the brand at least. You know,
yeah. And they're selling, you know, whatever, cheap margaritas and tacos, and I think it's the number one restaurant in America. And then they have the M&M store there, which we have the M&M store is like beyond belief. I think they sell like $20 million a year of M&M shots in that one store.
Oh my God.
This, if you have a good concept, the Las Vegas Strip is fantastic. The only problem is that the people that own the real estate, they can really pick and choose who they want in there. And, you know, in all honesty, if I were them and it's, you know, Klaus Moller and his wife, or, you know, the M&M Corporation or Mars Corporation, you know who you lease it to.
Right.
So it's very hard to get something there. But if we, you know, if we get a good space, yeah, I'm sure we would do something there.
Cool. Okay. So Klaus, let's take a quick little break again. When we come back, let's jump into kind of the bigger picture for your hospitality group, you know, where you guys are aiming to do and kind of talk long-term things.
Cool.
All right. We'll be right back, guys. Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado, bringing you stories in the food startup world. So we're talking to Klaus Moller, founder of Boardwalk Hospitality. So Klaus, let's jump into a little bit more in depth about just crowdfunding in general. What are the sorts of things, you know, if I were to kind of start a campaign or try to raise money, what are kind of your best tips or guidelines to actually do this properly and more effective?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is that you really constantly update your investors and treat them like big investors. So, you know, a lot of companies are sitting there going, oh, well, the guy put in $250, you know, whatever, $2. When for that person, $250 was probably a stretch for him to invest in a deal. And maybe he's invested $250 in a whole bunch of deals because he believes in crowdfunding.
Right.
And you see a lot of these, and I've invested in quite a few campaigns myself just to see what other people do.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you invest your money, and then once you've invested your money, often, you know, you don't hear anything anymore.
Right.
Sometimes ever.
They go silent.
You get updated, you know, until the fundraising is over. So you constantly get emails and you know, hey, come on, put in some more money, send it to your friends, which, you know, I do the same thing. But then a lot of times once they're funded and they're like, okay, the fundraising is now over, thanks everybody, then that's it. You don't literally don't get one update. You don't hear from them. And, you know, they treat you like the most important business partner while they need your money. And then once they're funded, they're gone. really short-sighted and really stupid, especially if you, you know, are thinking of doing an additional fundraiser down the line. So I think, you know, with us, we've got 500 people in the deal. Most of them are really happy. So the 70 or 80 or whatever people we have in Surfdog so far, these are all people that invested in our last deal. And, you know, we send them an email and say, hey, you know, I hope you're happy with Ben and Jerry's. Guess what? We're going to do a Surfdog deal. Are you interested in coming in? And you know, most of the larger investors did. So we changed it. On the first deal, we had, I think, a minimum investment of $100. We changed that now to $500. And the main reason is that, you know, you do have to be fair to your investors. You do have to stay in touch with them. You do have to send them quarterly reports and annual reports. And in all honesty, if you're taking an investment in of $100 and you have to four times a year, whatever, send them quarterly accounts and annual reports and it's just not cost effective, because that $100, you know, costs you $100 a year in just time and money and effort to keep them updated.
Right, right.
So, although, you know, everyone, all the crowdfunding sites always tell you, you know, do it. So many people like just like to invest $100 in, you know, 50 different deals, which I get. It ends up putting a huge burden on your infrastructure. And, you know, like in luckily at Ben and Jerry's, we didn't do an equity deal. We did a debt deal. So it's just a 3-year loan,
right,
which we're over a year into. So eventually that'll be paid off and then, you know, we don't have to bother. But if these were all long-term investors with $100 each, and, you know, for the next 50 years, we have to send them quarterly reports and this and that, the cost of servicing those individual investors, it's really not worth it. So I think that it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't make sense to bring in anyone for less than $500, because I think your cost is at least $50 a year per investor. If you look at the time our CFO spends and admin spends and everything.
Right, right.
So that's 10%. That's like having a loan and giving up equity. So in my opinion, you know, keep it to a $500 minimum and then make sure you really treat these people like gold. You update them all the time. You send them Christmas cards. If something fun happens at the store, you send an update.
Yeah.
And you treat them like who they are. They, you know, because in reality, they're the people that are employing you. You know, they're shareholders in the company. So you really need to treat them as such. And I think if you do, then if a year or 2 years down the line, you have another great idea or you want to expand. Like, I'm sure if we were to send those 500 people right now an email saying, guess what, we're going to do a Ben & Jerry's on the Strip in Las Vegas, I would guarantee that 60 to 70% of those people would invest and we would have it funded in a day.
That makes sense.
I mean, you already have that fan base. You always have – people are invested in your vision more than anything else. I mean, you, someone who has multiple, you know, companies, you know, you're expanding your network so much, you know, so much more and tenfold that – you do have that base, which they're fans about your hospitality and your places in general. So it's a good way to kind of, you know, continue that momentum that you have.
Yeah. And, you know, like, you know, the old saying for every 100 people with a genius idea, there's one person with money to fund it. Yeah. It's like, you really have to respect people that finance you, you know, because without them, everything you have is nothing but a damn dream. And you know, people forget that. They think they're geniuses because they have a great idea. And then if they're lucky enough to get funding, they're like really feeling great about themselves. And they don't realize that the people that funded you are really your boss. You know, they're the ones that made it happen. And they're the ones you have to report to and pay dividends to. So, you know, it doesn't matter if the end was $500 or $50,000. You really got to take care of them.
Do you fund or finance anything outside of your hospitality group?
We haven't yet. We are looking at doing a fundraiser for the Teak deal that we're doing.
Okay.
So we're hoping to do a fundraiser for that probably within the next 60 to 90 days. We're trying to make it like risk-free because it's such a fun deal. So we're gonna, you know, when I say we, this is my son's deal. My son hired a master tea blender. And we've been drying these teak leaves and blending them with other teas. And we're coming up with the most amazing teak tea that has, you know, all sorts of great properties. Right. So in order to secure the investors, because our trees in Costa Rica are 22 years old,
uh-huh,
and they take another 8 years, they're ready to harvest. And then these trees are, you know, worth probably $2,000 a piece just for the wood.
Yeah.
So the idea is to go to investors and say, for every $1,000 you invest in equity in our company, we also assign you all the income from one of the trees in 8 years. So regardless of how well the company does, you know, in 8 years, you're going to get whatever $2,000 or $1,800 back from just the wood that you actually, because you're physically owning the wood.
You're like, so, you adopted a tree.
Yeah, you basically adopt a tree, which then, you know, unfortunately gets cut down and then replanted in because it's like a sustainable plantation. Yeah. We harvest the trees and regrow them. But so you're guaranteed that income. So you don't really have it risk free. So we're kind of working on that right now and hope to have that live in the next 2 to 3 months.
Right. For people who don't know, what exactly is teak tea? What are benefits of it? What's it taste like? I've never had it.
I've never had that.
You know, it's very funny because we started this plantation and it's a long-term project, obviously. It takes 30 years before you can harvest it.
Right.
We were just paying upkeep for the plantation. We have a team there that manages everything. And then we found an article where, you know, hundreds of years or 100 years ago in Burma and the Chinese border to Burma, people would use the leaves and bark from teak trees to make these wonderful teas that have all sorts of health benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And it was kind of a lost art. So we went, did some research, found all the information, and then, you know, contacted our manager in Costa Rica, had him send out a whole batch of leaves to us, and, you know, we dried them here and whatever. You know, I'm not the tea blender, but then my son hired a master tea blender. We send them the leaves, the dried teak leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with a blend where they put in, you know, some Assam tea and some other great teas and concocted a tea that is really, really great. I mean, it's like beyond super tasty. It's super cool because, you know, it's a teak tea. And we hope to, you know, we're going to take it to market later this year. And, yeah, hopefully, you know, do a good refund campaign for that as well.
Great, great. You know, we talked to Johnny Price of WeFunder a couple weeks ago. You know, we're very excited for what they're kind of really providing all these entrepreneurs, another avenue of fundraising. On our website, actually, if you go to, you know, www.bootlegavocado.com, if you're an entrepreneur or someone who is looking to start a campaign, you could actually do that through us, which is great. So Klaus, I mean, what's kind of the bigger picture with your hospitality group, kind of long-term? What should people be very excited about or trying to know what's down the road?
We'll see. I mean, we just, you know, we're finishing our first year in April and, you know, one of the top Ben & Jerry's store in the nation already. We are going to start the hot dog selling hopefully by the end of March. Mm-hmm. We are also going to start catering and on demand, or you know, all the services like Uber Food and Grubhub and this and DoorDash. There's like so many services now
that there are
deliver food, and you know, I'm like the biggest culprit. I mean, I use them like 5 times a week.
Right.
And it's very, very interesting. We just learned that in New York there are like 3 restaurants that do burgers, pizza, hot dogs, and their entire business is delivery. They don't actually have a restaurant. They it looks like it's a restaurant on their website, mm-hmm. but you can't go and eat there. They only work with like Uber and DoorDash delivering food. And it's become such a big business. So especially with our hot dogs, we're gonna, you know, aggressively do that on all the, you know, we have like so many sports teams here. We have the college teams from UCLA and USC. You know, then we have the football teams, the baseball teams, the basketball teams, the Clippers, the Lakers, right? I mean, we have so many teams here that always, there's always one game night somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we're coming up with some fun delivery deals. So like if you order a hot dog on demand, if you order a meal, like say for $8.95, if you order hot dogs, fries, soda, et cetera, the hot dog will come in an actual ceramic Wiener dog bowl. That bowl costs $20 if you go to the store here and buy it. And, you know, we obviously have them made overseas where they cost $1.
Yeah.
But so you buy your $8.95 hot dog and it comes in a $20 gift. Or if you don't want that, you can get an oversized 32-ounce ceramic Venice Beach coffee mug. So we're doing a lot of fun stuff. And I think the on-demand and delivery business is really going to do well for us.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, and then like you said, you know, we're always interested in additional locations as long as they have really, really good existing food traffic. So if anyone is listening out there from Las Vegas and has a good place for us, call me.
Okay. Call the man.
Call the man. How do people kind of get in touch with you?
You know, anyone, you can email me. My email is Klaus, KLAUS@eMerican. It's like American, but with an E instead of an A. Klaus@American.com, and you know, I always get back the same day. So if anyone has questions, if anyone is interested in starting a campaign and wants to talk to me about what we did, you know, I love the guys at WeFunder. They, you know, they gave us this crazy opportunity when we came to them, and they were super supportive. And yeah, so if you know anyone is out there that is interested either in investing or doing their own campaign, email me and then we can, you know, jump on a call, or if they're locally, I'm happy to meet. I just absolutely, I love this whole thing.
No, it's great. I mean, we could hear your motivation, your excitement through all this thing and everything you do. So no wonder you're successful. So Klaus, thanks for being on our episode.
Thanks Klaus. You're awesome.
Yeah. Really great episode. Anthony, you want to talk about Speak Feast real fast?
Yeah. So, www.speakfeast.com. That's my website, which I think I do need to work on a little
three
bit.
Three W's or two?
It's
three.
I always say W. I don't know. Why do I say W? I don't know. Anyway, my company is Speak Feast LLC. On Instagram, I'm Chef Anthony Nichols. I do consulting and a little bit of everything involved in the food business. So reach out to me. My email address is anichols@speakfeast.com. Love to talk.
Cool. And I'm Mari Rodriguez from Bootleg Avocado, helping to scale your food startup on the operations and culinary side. Thanks for listening. Klaus, thanks for being on this episode.
Klaus.
Yeah, we'll be back next week, another episode, another entrepreneur, another food concept, and we'll go from there. So thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. And by the way, if you, after this, if you email me with like a link or something, I'll send that link to our 520 investors so they can.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Awesome. All right,
Klaus.
That's
great.
Have a great afternoon. Good luck with everything. And thanks for everyone for listening.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.